Welcome back to Phantom Island, brought to you by our friends at Homefield. My friends, definitely. Are they your friends, Ryan?
Yeah.
That's not even creative banter while I pull up my notes. This is going to just be a great show. Right off the bat, thanks to Homefield. And if you want to support this completely organized endeavor, go to phantomisland.show where you can receive a bounty of wonderful audio surprises. That sounded terribly unsettling.
Well, but if you're listening to this when it comes out, you will notice that we did a special bonus episode the Monday of this week.
We did.
And we're trying something a little different for Friday of this week as well. So if you get on board now, you really.
Guess what? I forgot what it
That's
was.
That's fine.
So it's going to surprise me too.
That's fine.
Oof, man. Best life. Every rustle in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here. Ryan, as everyone on this show is accustomed and bred to, this weekend is, of course, the start of La Liga.
Yeah.
You're really excited about this.
That's exactly where I knew you were going with
Absolutely, which is totally what our audience is used to hearing us talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know the story of how you became a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Can you tell it to me on a microphone with, you know, don't leave out the good details, but with some brevity?
Okay. So, short version, Eagles are playing the Patriots in the whatever Super Bowl that was,
like 20,
with the Philly special.
18 or
yes.
something.
Yeah. The Nick Foles beats Tom Brady Super Bowl. It's important to remember Nick Foles beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl.
I love it.
We were watching this game. We lived in New York at the time. We were watching this game with friends of ours. I have a cohort of friends who are all Rutgers fans, and half of them are Eagles fans, and half of them are Giants fans. Based on this game, I was like, wow, what a fun time for the Eagles. But then, over the next couple of years, the Eagles became this, like, unholy mess of a front office where they were benching, like, they had this weird, I'm not going to get too far into it. Mostly, I was attracted to the delightful mess that the Philadelphia Eagles embody, both as a fan base and as sometimes an organization, although they've been much better managed since I decided to, like, link up with them personally.
Okay. And then also in that time, they have returned to form. They just won another Super Bowl.
Yes.
So it's their second in franchise history. So you saw them win the first one.
Yeah.
And then it was like, ha, what a mess. But, oh, wait, we're good. We're good enough again to win another Super Bowl. And go to, they lost to the Chiefs.
Yes.
So in your sort of participation, you've seen them in three Super Bowls, winning two.
Yes, I got on this bandwagon before all of that happened, but I'm not mad that all of that happened.
Yeah, so the coal black heart of my Atlanta fandom is like, was it a mess, really?
Oh, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I earned it, I deserve this, or whatever. But then, of course, very briefly, I bought a jacket. It's a sweet vintage Philadelphia Eagles jacket that has Penny embroidered on the right breast pocket. Nobody knows who Penny was, but it's not important. It's been floated to me that it's possibly short for penitentiary, and that this either belonged to someone who was incarcerated or someone who was a corrections officer.
I fell in love with the jacket once that detail was revealed. I have an aunt named Penny.
Yeah.
Spelled the same way.
Sure.
My entire assumption, like the entire time I assumed, rather, that this was a woman named Penny who gave up her jacket and it fell into your possession, LOL, whatever. Then the idea of it being either, like you said, either a guest or staff at the penitentiary, then I was like, fine, this is too amazing not to give you your flowers.
Yeah.
Do you think that you would have been an Eagles fan today if not for attending that party? And that party basically was sort of predicated on the Eagles going to the Super Bowl.
Maybe not. No, it was, and it wasn't just. It was like it wasn't just that because I had seen the Eagles playing. I watched the Donovan McNabb Super Bowl as well.
Yeah.
They didn't win that one, but I think it was that they won with Nick Foles, like with Nick Foles catching a touchdown. Like there was something about the Doug Peterson Eagles in particular that was like, oh, this is kind of like this is not supposed to work the way it is.
Okay, but success was the
component. But if it had gone the way you thought, the Nick Foles playoff led Eagles had gone, were supposed to go. No, I might not have been as interested.
What do you think if they ate shit that day against Brady?
That would have sucked. And I probably wouldn't have been that interested in like following them afterwards.
This is not me baiting you, like most of our conversations.
It's okay if you do.
No, this is me genuinely endeavoring to learn about myself.
Yeah.
Can you now tell the listeners, because you may know this better than anyone in my life, mm-hmm. the relationship I have with sports fandom and like what you have told me before is like a baked in, impossible to blast off like level of self-loathing. Like I don't allow myself nice things.
No, yeah, I think you, I haven't sat with this and psychoanalyzed it, but obviously...
You just sit next to me every day, you should psychoanalyze that.
Well, the two teams that I think you care the most about are the Braves and the Falcons.
Yeah, in reverse order.
Yes, sorry, I didn't mean to rank them in that way. I don't know if, I'm not sure that I could name another team that you like... actively devote a lot of your emotional wealth towards.
One of my friends texted me this morning about, he's like, you really should be excited about the Atlanta Hawks this year.
Okay.
But I'm like, but yeah, so there are they charting? Yes. Is there a gulf between number two and the rest of them?
But
yes.
Even that like 60 win Hawks team, I don't remember you being like, oh, I want to talk about this all the time.
Cocaine so white it gets a Kyle Korver jersey, baby.
So yeah, I mean,
no, I would throw the Nashville Predators in there as well, because sure. I like to have a hometown team.
Yeah,
but I've watched the Predators do amazing things and eat it and not.
Yeah, the Predators were bad this year, and at no point did I get the sense of like, oh, this is really weighing on you.
This is affecting Godfrey's mental health.
Yes.
Whereas you have watched me watch a Saints game before.
Yes, and yeah. I think the difference between the Falcons, obviously, like baseball season is long enough that if the Braves are bad as they are this year, and there are reasons for that,
mm-hmm.
I think it gives you more time and probably a lot of fans more time to like process and detach from it and get to a place of like, okay, this is what the season is.
Also real fast, what happened in Atlanta at that baseball stadium 4 years ago?
The World Series win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're still...
Oh, yeah. We're still coasting on... Yeah, sure.
It's probably up now because they're going to be bad this year.
Right. For those who don't know, and this could be an entire separate episode, you were at 28-3 in person.
Yeah. And as you know, you've known me for a long time, I sort of define my sports fandom by that one sports team that is a death march, for sure.
Yes.
I've often picked at you in a grumpy way about like, I'm just going to pick the Eagles because they provide me joy and I think it's fun and I think it's a little, you know.
It's messy, but I appreciate the messiness of
it. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you also have like a much healthier psychological relationship, whereas you've heard me say 1,000 times, I can't walk in and accept something successful because I don't deserve it, or it has to like, or some sort of pain and suffering has to define the fandom to make it real.
Yeah, oh yes. You are an adherent to the idea of like if you don't put a certain amount of equity into it and that equity is earned through watching your team give up a Hail Mary, watching them throw the terrible interception, or in some cases, as we've talked about with the Falcons, watching them rip off four meaningless wins at the end of the season and tank their draft position.
Like six times in the last decade. This is not just cute banter. This is not an Atlanta Falcons episode.
No, we'll do a we're not all like this about the Falcons one day, but not today. I don't know if you'll get to be on it.
Brought to you by Alprazolam. This is not cute banter. So this is, I think, a quotient of sports fans feel this way. I have been around the world enough, at least on the, you know, Western side of it, to meet a lot of sports fans. And outside of the United States, I've noticed this tendency. I've met a lot of hockey fans. So I know it's bigger than America. I know it's bigger than any one sport. But I suffer a pretty severe case of whatever that is that we just described. That feeling of like, I can't just walk into joy.
Right.
I can't just pick something that's joyful. Like I enjoyed watching Michael Jordan play when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I was an Atlanta Hawks fan. I could never like buy a Bulls jersey.
To use a video game metaphor, you're not going to fire up CFB and be like, let's play on freshman.
No. Nor am I ever going to play CFB and pick like Texas or Bama.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
I can't.
Right.
Ever.
This is the real world.
This is a sickness.
Version of that.
Ryan, I have
news. You spend your time and emotions.
I have news.
Oh, God.
I found a soccer team. okay. I'm going to do this part really fast, too.
Okay.
because I do need to lay some groundwork on what I have identified in myself as 100%. This isn't banter. I think this is actually unhealthy. I'd like to a level of therapy, because after 28-3, I have lived through the death of family members, and I don't mean like just grandparents, but I've lived through that. I'm talking about like sudden death of like family members in the most tragic of circumstances. I've lived through really bad shit in my life. I've lived through medical diagnosis that I didn't see coming, all like bad, bad things. And I would genuinely look people in the face after 28-3, and I would say this thing with a wink. I would say, it's the worst thing that's ever happened to me that didn't matter. And I had to add the back of that sentence because my wife was like, please stop saying it's the actual worst thing that ever happened to your life.
Yeah, it's the same thing as when you're married and have multiple children and you're like, this Super Bowl was the best day of my life. You're like, you can't, right.
Yeah, it works both ways. Because of that, like, I recognized pretty early on, like, oh, like, this is, I have an unhealthy relationship with fandom. I don't know how to fandom in a healthy, in a non-toxic way. Because I was clinically depressed after the Super Bowl for a long time. The good news, by the way, just as to put a pin on that, I don't think it'll ever affect me that. I don't even know if they ever win the Super Bowl, if I'll ever achieve a corresponding high, for what it's worth.
I think you will never, wherever you were in that moment when the score was 28-3, I think you'll never trust that feeling ever again.
Oh, God, no. No.
So you'll never be pushed off that building again.
Yeah. I'll push people away. Real healthy. I need to start by saying I have not encouraged this behavior in my children. One kid cheers for the Falcons, but that same kid is also like, oh, I found these like really cool Minnesota Vikings pins I can put in my backpack. Or when he played flag football, he was like, oh, I want Seattle Seahawks receiver gloves. And I was like, hell yeah, Seattle, Soundgarden.
It's also, in your defense, it's a lot easier now to latch on to sort of like do that.
Oh, these entitled little dirtbags have Sunday Ticket and Red Zone. They can watch anything they want to.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Okay.
I encourage them to find their own fandom. Mm-hmm. One of them chose a local NFL team, and we sat him down and talked for hours about why that was a bad
idea. That's character building in its own way.
No kidding. Just talking about passing it along. My kids got into soccer, period, full stop. The first thing they did, which I think this is pretty common in North America right now, is it's the premiership first.
Okay.
One kid came home, I would say like a quarter of his class, the kids were in soccer jerseys instead of NFL, certainly not Major League Baseball. Sorry, RIP baseball. One of his really close friends plays soccer. He's really good at soccer. He and his dad are really into Liverpool. So kid number one picks Liverpool. That is a top six program in the premiership.
Sure.
That's a brand name. The Falcons fan in the family, because he is of my DNA, says, all right, I'm going to screw with my brother. I'm going to pick Man City.
Okay.
As the, like, and I described Man City as like the come lately, spin their way in, all this stuff. I tried to explain Oasis. He got part of it. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, this is great. It was basically like a child who I think was a 5 or 6 at the time being like, no, I'm going to be a troll. This is fantastic. Again, Man City, too successful for me to find any affinity for.
Right.
This past year, I was like, oh, the Nottingham Forest story is interesting to me. And they ate it down the curb, down the stretch. They ate the curb down the stretch, is what I'm trying to say. Where they fell out of Champions League qualification, which would have been massive for the franchise, and just kind of duffed it. And I was like, well, that feels like Falcons. I feel, okay, cool. Good enough. And then I was like, I think I'll probably carry with Forrest into the premiership.
When you see yourself doing this, does any part of you say, I don't have to, or I can
this
stop?
This is what I want to talk about. So the question that we're going to ask today is,
why is Steven like this? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Get my dad on speaker. The question we're going to ask today is, success mandatory for the recipe of fandom? Do you have to find joy in your fandom for it to be fandom?
Does your team have to win for your fandom to feel validating
or
worthwhile?
Does success have to be a component in fandom?
There's a recent thing that I helped with that. Okay. Go ahead.
Because a lot of people listening are going to be like, well, I'm a lifelong blank fan and we haven't won shit.
Yeah.
I have now walked into a story I'm about to tell you in the dumbest way possible, but had a ripcord at any moment, and I'm about to declare my fandom for a La Liga team.
You're signing on. Okay.
When I walk you through the timeline of idiocy here, and at the end of it, when I say, no, I'm now quadrupling down on this team after everything I'm about to tell you, you're going to come back to this question and be like, why do you feel this is authentic to do to yourself?
Okay.
Because not only have I picked a team that's in a lurch, I picked a team that is like, the foundation is broken in an embarrassing and galling way, which, again, go Falcons, okay?
Okay.
Am I doomed to repeat this for the rest of my life?
I need to know, mm-hmm. and I think the listeners are certainly going to want to know, what team are we about to talk about?
We're first going to talk very briefly about a family trip to Spain. That's why we're talking about La Liga.
Okay, yes.
On this family trip to Spain, my wife studied in Spain when she was in college. She used to be totally fluent. She's conversationally fluent now. By the way, if you try and use American Spanish in Spain, but you're trained to speak in Mexico or speak to Latin America, as my wife is, it actually takes longer.
Yeah.
If you are 6'5", impossibly American, and a big, dumb white male, which I am all of those things, you can just walk in and be like, hey, hola. And immediately they're like,
we've got to speak English to this man.
Like, we were all going to go English as fast as we can.
Someone feed the St. Bernard.
Exactly. I am essentially their Great Pyrenees. Like, it's fluffy. It's stupid. It's going to die
it's
early.
It's not biting.
Right. But, oh, God, it's in the lobby. Right. Let's get it out of the lobby.
Okay.
So, just as an aside, we did this big family trip to Spain. We've been planning for years. I've been to Spain in my pro wrestling days. I had been to Spain as a tourist since then. But my wife, like, really knows Spain. She lived there, and she lived far away. I had been all those times in travel to Madrid. We were going to kind of anchor off the East Coast in Barcelona. This all matters for a second because of soccer. We get to Barcelona before we get to where my team is. And we do all the sort of tropey Barcelona things. And one of those is that, again, my kids are, like, aware and pulling things from, like, I don't know if they're getting on the Paramount Plus app. I don't know if this is just kids at school, honestly. Yeah. But my eldest, who's now a diehard, quote-unquote, Liverpool fan of 2 years, is like, I want to go to the Barca store.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We go to the Barca store. My wallet takes a 28-3, and we're getting Barca this, and we're getting Barca that, and we got to do this and that. The next day, the Man City fan does the same thing. He goes, I thought about it, and I want to get some Barca gear.
Mm, okay.
So really what you want to do is backtrack in the middle of a heat dome summer in Europe and walk back to a crowded tourist area to go back to a retail store and pay an exorbitant amount of money for more Barca gear. So we're Barca'd out.
Yeah.
If you don't know, for whatever reason, I'm talking about Barcelona.
Yeah.
Right? So there's Real Madrid and Barcelona, and that's the Yankees and Red Sox, I guess, if that's the best comp for, or Alabama and Georgia, or Alabama, Michigan, whatever you want to say, for La Liga. That's about as much as I know about La Liga at this point.
You're already doing better than me.
Okay. For the purpose of this, we should say you don't know much more about La Liga than I do.
Oh, right? No. Usually I think the trope here is that one of us comes with a heavy amount of knowledge, or we have a guest on who does. Today, it's definitely not me.
Oh, yeah, well,
I know the teams you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that's
so far.
It. Yes.
Right. Okay.
But you didn't pick...
The kids are, course not. I can't.
Okay.
They literally have the La Liga trophy in the lobby of this, like, three-story merchandise store. And you can take a picture with it. My kids are like, could you imagine, Ryan, if I showed up and I was like, oh, they have the Lombardi trophy right now?
Sure.
Oh, man, I'm a fan.
Sure.
I can't do that. I have to suffer, Ryan. Because I'm an idiot.
Yep. Go ahead.
So we continue on, and we're going on our trip. The shortest version is this. My wife plans a stop in Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
Because... if you are listening to this, you've maybe seen the show Andor, which is absolutely amazing. I know you haven't seen season 2 yet. All of the exteriors in Andor that take place on Coruscant, if you're a Star Wars fan, which is the Mon Mothma scenes, and I don't want to spoil the rest of it, but anything that looks like it's outdoors by like a pool and there's these sort of beautiful architecture, that's all real. That's all the City of Arts and Sciences in Valencia.
Okay.
We're on this trip. It's not necessarily kid-friendly. My wife's a kinder human being than I, and she's like, we're going to stop and go to this place. Because our one kid is the Liverpool, now Liverpool Barca diehard, tough life, is also a diehard
he's
Star
also,
Wars fan.
But he's also the Titans fan, for the record.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, it's not a clean sheet. So we go and we have a blast.
Yeah.
And I start to do this thing I do where I'm like, well, everybody loves Barcelona and everybody loves Madrid. But one thing I did notice, and this was genuine. The more we got into Spain, the more I enjoyed the trip. Barcelona was a combination, maybe not in the best ways, of like Midtown Manhattan and New Orleans.
Okay.
And I'm like, that shit got old.
Yeah,
I had three
sure.
kids with me.
Sure.
I know Barcelona's an amazing city. We did the architecture tours. We did all that stuff. I'm not trying to
speak
ill.
They don't want you there anyway.
They definitely...
some portion of them don't want you there is what I should
I
say.
I don't want to sandbag this podcast anymore because I haven't even gotten to this team yet, but I did find out that, guess what? They hate the Brits more than us. In fact, they like us over the Brits. I digress. We have a lovely time in Valencia.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. It's quiet. Everyone there is like really friendly. There's a lot to do. It feels in just like natively Spanish
sure.
in a way that the other one doesn't.
Yep.
We then move on and we go down the coast. We're traveling by train and bus and we're doing all this and the kids are having a good time. We conclude our trip in this town called Altea. Altea, I don't know if I'm saying it correctly, but it's basically like you got a beach and you got like cliffy mountain areas and you stay in the cliffy mountain area and you go down to the beach every day. And this yeah. is amazing. My wife has she's the trip she'd always planned. Everyone's so happy. Your boy's X amount of sangria deep one night. And we're going through a little tchotchke shop and I see magnets.
Uh-huh.
This is where you're really, this is the part you don't know about. I see
boy.
Magnets. And I go, what's that? And they're like, there's Barca, there's Real. It's all soccer teams in La Liga.
Sure.
And I said, oh, that one has a bat.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like Batman.
Yeah, like Meatloaf.
Like Stephen Godfrey, the lifelong DC Comics uh-huh. fan. I'm like, yeah. oh, that one has a bat.
Yeah, okay.
I'm like, what is that?
Yeah.
That is my friend Valencia FC, my new soccer team.
okay.
I'm not even in Valencia anymore.
Okay, sure.
And I said to the boys.
What are their colors?
They, you know, like soccer teams have a lot of colors.
Yeah, I know. But...
kits are predominantly white.
Okay.
Okay. Red, blue, yellow are involved in the crest, and then a black bat at the top.
Okay.
It's
why is it? Why is there a bat?
I don't.
You don't even know.
Here's the deal. Here's why I don't know. Here's why I don't know, and this is where our story begins.
When I record the outro for this, I'll include why there's a bat. I'll look it up. But go ahead.
I immediately tell the boys, "Did you guys have fun in Valencia? I really did.
Yeah."
That's going to be my team.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought the €4 refrigerator magnet, which I was going to bring today to show you.
That's okay.
It's on my fridge. You can see that next time you come over for a Valencia game. We are walking back to our Airbnb that night, and I just pull up Valencia FC, and they're like the standings. And I was like, oh, they kind of finished pretty low. I'm like, what have I done? Because I should point out, I left one thing out. Valencia is the third largest city in Spain.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, it's not the Red Sox or the Yankees. But it doesn't necessarily have to be the Pirates. Like, maybe I'm going to do good for myself, and I'm going to, like, what is
maybe
that?
Maybe I've Cardinals stumbled upon the Astros.
Exactly. Or, yes. That's exactly what I thought.
Or
where I was
the
like,
Tigers or something.
Yeah.
Like
and
that.
I'm like, La Liga's fun. I know it's fun to watch. All soccer heads tell me to watch it. Yeah. I don't really know that much about it. Okay. Here's where I'm going to pick this up. I was gone basically on the 4th of July weekend. I start seeing headlines. Valencia has secured $377 million for a new stadium. Well, Ryan, my brain goes, that's a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, everything's mm-hmm. good. I'm going to read you off some stuff real fast.
Okay.
Valencia CF has secured financing totaling €322 million for the development of New Mestalla Stadium, the Spanish football club said on Thursday. Okay, great, cool. All right, we had a lovely time in Valencia. Boy, hey, isn't Andor a great show? Maybe I should blame Tony Gilroy for what's about to happen. This is all, everything's been lovely so far.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed Spain and I really enjoyed Valencia. Yada, yada, yada. I go home, we put the kids down, I get on Wikipedia, I find out Valencia has won 6 La Liga titles,
okay.
8 Copa del Rey, 1 okay. Supercopa de España, don't even know what that is, but it is fun to say.
Sure.
1 Copa de Eva Duarte, okay, in the Euro competitions, which is what really matters, they've won a UEFA Cup, a UEFA Cup Winners' Cup, say that 2 times fast, two UEFA Super Cups, all right? And they went to the Champions League finals, which is like the one thing I know about in 2000 and 2001. The IFFHS named them the world's best club in 2004.
Okay.
So surely, Ryan.
This is trending more Cardinals than I thought, but
exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, and my wife, who was raised a Cardinals fan, I was like, I think I'm doing okay here.
Yeah.
I'm doing okay here. The 2010 FIFA World Cup that Spain won.
Yes.
4 Valencia players.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, all right. This is it. This is my team. The next day I get on the train and I'm Googling. Okay. And then I'm like, well, I got to figure out what's going on this year. Okay. So the first news article that comes up, Valencia has seen 2 promising center backs leave this preseason. I can't not pronounce this name. Yerick Gazarowski joined PSV Eindhoven and Christian Mosquera is close to signing with Arsenal. These moves generate very necessary income.
Mm.
And this is when the large American on the train says out loud, oh shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have picked the best team possible for the worst part of my fandom, Ryan. Here we go. Last year, Valencia finished 12th in La Liga. Do you know how many teams are in La Liga?
I'm going to guess 12.
20.
Oh, okay. That's better than I thought.
Not relegated.
Yeah.
But also not good.
Not good. Yeah.
2 years prior, they fought basically relegation the entire year.
Okay.
from 1999 until 2004, they had basically the most successful period in like in the modern era. Yeah. Okay. So they had the two La Liga titles, yeah. the UEFA Cup, all, basically all that stuff I rattled off essentially happened in that, that period.
Six-ish year.
Valencia is considered one of the best clubs in Europe. All right. They kind of have a 28-3 moment. This is me projecting a little.
That's okay.
But soccer's obviously scored different. Yeah. In the 2001 Champions League final, they're up 1-1 on Bayern Munich.
Mm-hmm.
The game ends up tied. Then they're up in penalties, 1-0, and then they lose in penalties.
Oh, okay. That's, yeah, it's not, you're right, it's not 28-3. I mean,
it's hard to create a soccer 28-3, but like...
I'm sure someone will tell us about one that happened, yeah. and that will be delightful.
This is also a nice moment, one where I'm going to pause, and we're going to talk about home field.
This episode only exists because Stephen Godfrey saw a magnet with a bat on it, said, huh, neat, and decided to throw his support behind a soccer team an entire ocean away from where he lives. Now, maybe you think that's a bad choice on his part, but what if you decided to lean into Godfrey's perspective with a little help from our sponsor, Homefield? For example, lumberjacks are big and strong and very cool. Oh, hey, look at that. There's a whole collection of Northern Arizona gear at Homefield with axes and all that on it. Maybe you dream of being a pirate, but you fear the U.S. Coast Guard. Why not root for East Carolina or Seton Hall or ETSU, all of which are available at Homefield? You could become a Campbell fan because you want a shirt that has a camel on it, wearing a helmet, and playing football. With what hands, you might be wondering? Stop asking these questions. These are but a handful of the schools you can find at Homefield Apparel. I didn't even mention the Anteater options. So go to homefieldapparel.com or follow Homefield on social media to stay up to date on all the new tees, hats, jackets, sweatshirts, and more that they're dropping. And believe me, a lot of new stuff is coming. Okay, back to Steven's existential crisis.
Ryan, as we go further and we get into the soccer of this, novice level. Novice level.
Yeah.
Please don't get in the mentions and tell me what I did wrong here. This is designed. I know what the things I'm going to say are factually correct, but people are going to add context, and I welcome that. But please understand, bumbling novice into
you don't,
this.
Yeah,
role.
You don't. For this episode, you don't have to tell us that we're dumb. We know that.
I think the difference between European soccer and like the rest of sports that I've really kind of glommed onto the last year is that like. You can have unbridled success, and you can be a brand, and you can be at the top of whatever you want to measure it, English soccer, European soccer, whatever. And in such short order, the floor can fall out.
Okay.
Like, and you fall through the basement to the earthen foundation, like, in a way that you just don't see, especially in American sports. It's just kind of, again, it does involve relegation as a possibility, but the finances swing so erratically that I really don't have anything to compare it to.
Okay.
And I think that's where you create these like amazing stories. And let me take you back to 04.
Okay.
They're one of the best program. They're one of the best teams in Europe. They have a manager, Rafa Benitez. He decides to leave. Okay. He had some problems with the club president at the time, who I'll introduce in a second. He will later become head coach of Liverpool.
Okay.
To give you an idea of what he's worth, he goes on to coach Liverpool.
Yeah.
So you can kind of already tell who's right and who's wrong in that situation. All right. Okay. All right. He was replaced by a former Valencia coach, who's another guy named Claudio Ranieri, who people will know, and I think I just mispronounced his last name. He had recently been fired by Chelsea, but had been successful at Chelsea for a time, I believe. Okay. Despite lifting something called the European Super Cup, the second reign for Ranieri is a disappointment. Valencia harbored realistic hopes of retaining their La Liga crown, so they've won La Liga. They're basically the best team in La Liga in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But by February, they found themselves in seventh place. They'd also been knocked out of the Champions League group phase, and Ranieri was sacked promptly in February.
Okay.
So the 04-05 season ended with them outside of the UEFA Cup spots. So everything's kind of falling apart. We had a bad year, Ryan.
Yeah. But that was 2004 to 2005. Teams have bad years.
Okay. Let's jump just 3 years ahead to the next notable moment here.
Yeah.
Remember all that successful stuff I told you about?
Yep.
In 2008, the slump continues.
Okay.
We now have a slump that basically they're not in the UEFA Cup, they're not in Champions League, they're not winning La Liga. They're fair to Midland at this point.
Yeah.
Whoops, they're in debt for 400 million euros, Ryan.
How did that happen?
Million euros.
Okay, that's a lot.
That president, Juan Bautista Soler, while Valencia is up, let's just say my guy is enjoying that part of life.
Okay.
And there's an idea that's both like, Soler is a bad manager of money, and arguably when you're short 400 million euro and you make promises and you make plans, and I'm going to get to one of those plans in a second.
Okay.
Okay. But also, this is soccer. This is what I've learned, and this is what's so fascinating to me. You can have all the success that I just outlined and be one of the top clubs in Europe, and if you have a, just a little bit of a bump or a hiccup, the way the revenue is decided, any year that you're not in the Champions League, you take a, you lose a significant amount of revenue. Mm-hmm. So imagine having a pretty decent base salary but not livable, and you're sort of living off of the bonus you may or may not get every year. But even if you're really good, you're in Champions League 9 out of 10 years. That one year you're not, if a player contract falls the wrong way,
right,
if there's stadium financing, if there's anything, it can be club financing for staff, any number of expenses, debt can mount so quickly. It's crazy. It's like quicksand.
Yes, and 2008 is not like a great overall economic time in the world as it is.
Hold that thought.
Okay, good.
I really hope the thing that blew me away the most will blow you away the most.
Okay.
And if you're listening, I do too. Here's what I can tell you about Juan Bautista Soler. I can give you a million anecdotes as to why he is maybe not best fit for this job, or, hey, how could someone lose 400 million euro? Mm-hmm. Instead, I'm just going to read you a story from 2014, because that's the next time Soler, who ends up not in his position at president of Valencia, well, he had tried to have his successor kidnapped.
Oh!
Okay? He was arrested in 2014. You ready?
Yeah.
This is translated from Spanish media to, I think it's like an English wire service.
Okay,
I'm trying to credit, but I don't have it.
Yeah.
Police made the arrest after a two-week investigation involving the possibility that Soler had hired an Eastern European specialist. You just feel the Jason Statham movie starting,
right? Yeah, sure. Yeah.
For between 50 and 100,000 euro, at the time that would have been between 69 and 138 grand. I mean, that's bargain basement.
Sure.
To abduct his successor, a man named Soriano. Here's why. Soler left the team shortly after the giant debt problem occurred, citing health reasons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
After his departure, he sold his share of the club to his successor Soriano for 85.5 million euro. It's about 118 US at the time, and that gave Soriano a majority stake in the team. Soriano only intended on purchasing the club as a middleman in order to sell it to a Uruguayan company, Investment Dalport.
Okay.
That deal fell through when it was discovered that the money Investment Dalport intended to purchase the club with never actually existed, and the notes were false. So, middleman Soriano was stuck with the club and naturally had trouble making payments to Soler.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Who decides, I'll fix this. I'll kidnap the son of a bitch.
I don't entirely see how that would solve the money flow, but go ahead.
He tried to get out of the deal, but a court order ordered him to make his payments plus interest for being late. Formerly a majority share, Soriano's cut today only represents 5% of ownership. This is in 2014. Mm-hmm. And his shares have been seized. Unfortunately, Soler apparently still has some bad blood towards Soriano, likely caused by a loss on the deal. So he decided to take matters into his own hands.
Mm.
According to Spanish authorities, the prosecution has not yet decided to ask for jail time, and Soler is being released, da-da-da-da-da. All this sort of got sussed out after the fact. But his decision was, you owe me. Your super weird business deal with the Uruguayans fell through.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a side note, read the sequel, Heat 2, by Michael Mann. There's an entire plot about why Uruguay is one of those countries where a bunch of international law doesn't apply.
Yeah.
And it's basically a way station for all smuggling in the world. So Uruguayan business, kids, is usually not a good descriptor. You're not going to probably have an authentic deal on Uruguayan business, okay?
So to recap where I think we are, this is not exactly right, but given the ownership stakes involved.
Yeah, we're still not
this
there
This is a
yet.
Little bit like if Dan Snyder had put all the other Dan Snyderness to the side.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say he had run Washington into a shitload of debt.
Uh-huh.
Stepped down and sold his majority ownership to Josh Harris, who's the current owner.
Mm-hmm. Commanders are in a good place now.
Josh Harris went to go sell the team to a third party who backed out. And Josh Harris, in this example, isn't a billionaire and can't pay Dan Snyder. So Dan Snyder pays somebody to kidnap Josh Harris.
Of course.
Okay, that's where we're at.
But also, Josh Harris never really had any money. He was getting money from like...
Right, it was all a shit. Yeah.
Who's
all
the racist guy who owned the Clippers or something? Like, yeah. Who's like, he was going to front it to him, but like, yeah.
Yeah,
but then also, again, Uruguayan holding company is basically like... mob.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, yep. I want to take it back for a second.
Mm-hmm.
This is the third largest city in Spain. La Liga is one of the most successful leagues in soccer in the world.
Yeah.
All right. Spain is a power in the World Cup. This is the Cubs or the Cardinals.
This is a valuable commodity.
Yeah. But it's like the San Francisco Giants, actually. Maybe that's the comp that had won three World Series in the 2010s. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not a shit franchise or a shit league that this is happening to. But Steven drank too much wine and walked around and had a good time.
Steven saw a bat.
Steven saw a bat. All right. Let's go back to 2014.
Okay.
Amidst the kidnapping. They're struggling financially. They're treading water on the pitch. This thing keeps happening, which is so sad and depressing. Valencia is a brand. And the reason why I know that for a fact is year over year, as I looked at these stories, there's soccer players that look, I'm a casual, I don't know who they are, but they're always listed as young elite player that comes up in the Valencia system. And then they get good and Valencia sells them. And they don't sell them for any strategy involving roster or depth or scheme. It's just they literally need the fucking money. Mm-hmm. They need the money to pay the rent.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this over and over again. So it becomes increasingly depressing, and the fans are really starting to freak out. It's bad. There's a businessman from Singapore who buys the team. His name is Peter Lim.
Okay.
He's a stockbroker. He's kind of famous for making one investment where he put $10 million into the palm oil industry, and that blew up, and then he just became like a crazy billionaire. He had thrown some money around English soccer and gone in on some investments with like that famous crop of Manchester United players like Beckham and all them. So the gist at the time is that you have this guy, and this is a period in which I always recommend the book The Club, where this is happening a lot in Europe, where it's like businessman from another country comes in, he's richer than 4 foot of a bull's ass, he's just going to spend his way into fixing this, or he's going to fuck it up even worse. Guess what happens? Door number two. But the gist is that Valencia is like a good brand. This is a winner, but they're trapped in this sort of financial spiral. It's like a distressed property with good bones, but like maybe great bones again. So they keep developing these guys and they keep selling them off. Let's just stop that and we'll start winning soccer games, all right? People celebrate when Lim comes on and buys the team. Like they're in the streets.
Because it feels like the bleeding's about to stop.
But it's just like you talked about the Dan Snyder thing. What has Josh Harris done except not be Dan Snyder? So the solution feels really simple and really achievable when you've had this crazy corrupt president who's like trying to kidnap people and all this bullshit's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't do that, and you'll automatically be better because the franchise itself has a value if you're not just stepping on what it grows all the time. There's a quote to The Athletic by a former Valencia executive. All Lim had to do was be competent. Quote, he had 40,000 people waiting on him. He had everything to succeed, a good team, good directors and executives who knew football and were respected within the game. The fans were with him the whole way. The whole city was with him. He had everything. And he destroyed it. So Lim is friends with this guy who, in our world, Ryan, is the European Jimmy Sexton.
Okay.
Or Drew Rosenhaus.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay? Sure. Yep.
And this guy's name is Jorge Mendes. He's super tight with a super agent. That ain't ever good because you're now being bent to the will of the super agent and not what's best for your team. He immediately fires a coach and hires one of his clients. And actually that client is Nuno Espirito. He's like pretty good. I know I just butchered that name, but he gets there and immediately realizes that this situation is kind of wonky and bolts. At one point in Lim's tenure, I pulled this from two different YouTube soccer YouTubers.
Yeah.
Because I still don't believe it. He employs 16 coaches in 9 years.
What?
Yeah.
That can't.
Here's the best one, right?
Okay. Is there a repeat in here? Is there a like...
No, but remember what I said about being dumb and white in Spain?
Yeah.
And English?
Yeah.
Gary Neville. Do you know who Gary Neville is?
Yes.
Gary Neville is a former soccer player.
Yeah.
If you couldn't tell by the name, he's real English.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? He's hired as head coach. Ryan, he's never coached at any level.
What is the longest tenure that any of these 16 have? Like, you can't possibly...
There's a couple spread for like... close to a full season. There's some that are games.
Yeah, okay? Sure, yeah.
Gary Neville has never been a coach at any level,
I can see
Ryan.
This Wikipedia chart.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
That's bad. Yeah. Maybe that, back in America, that's a Trent Dilfer situation.
Oh, it's a Jeff Saturday situation.
But wait, it gets worse.
Yeah.
What if Jeff Saturday got hired to the Colts?
Yeah.
And he couldn't speak English. Gary Neville can't speak Spanish.
Is this the part? Is this the part that you're... Nope. Oh, okay. It's going to get worse.
Neville was part of an ownership group of a smaller English club, like a mid-championship level club. Right. That had sold 50% of its stake for cash to Lim. So they were just been on
were,
a deal
they
together.
They were just business bros.
And they were business bros.
Yeah.
And he made him head coach of a Spanish team. And he couldn't speak Spanish. Okay? Okay. Okay. Let's jump to 2019.
We're how long was Gary? Hold on. I'm going to look it up.
You look it up because I'm not done yet. In 2019, we're seeing some good vibes, Ryan.
Okay.
Things are okay. It's not Gary Neville. He's already gone. Valencia wins the Copa del Rey in 2019, and they finished fourth in La Liga, which, given what I know as a super casual Ryan, like, Barca spins like a freaking corporation. So does Real, okay? I've been to Real's stadium, the new one. Like, I get it. You're going to have standards of, like, you're going to have the Dodgers, and then you're going to have, like, a really... plucky, I don't know, like this year it's the Mariners, right?
Yeah.
And I sought out in my self-loathing to not cheer for the Dodgers, and I was like, give me that plucky Mariners team, right? Give me that fun, give me that 1 year with Giannis in the Bucks. Like, mm-hmm. That's what I signed up for.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, all right. This is 2019.
Coached, hold on, Gary Neville ended up coaching 16 league games, won 3 of them.
Uh-huh.
And in no game did Valencia walk away with a single clean sheet.
Okay.
They got their asses kicked in a lot of these games.
Ryan, we're back, though. It's 2019. We're mm-hmm. back. We're finished mm-hmm. fourth. The entire coaching staff, the entire front office, like basically what we in America would say, like the GM and player personnel, they're all fired.
Okay.
Because they go to Lim. And the initial reports are fought over the transfer policy. Basically, what they said was, please stop selling us off like we're scrapyard.
Yeah.
And Lim's solution after finishing fourth and like seeing where we have hope on the horizon.
Getting close.
You're all fucking fired.
Okay.
This is when now from 2019, this one little blip, now we enter chaos. Literally riots in the streets, mm-hmm. literally protests. Mm-hmm. People like you know the Run DMC logo, the classic red bars with the white letters?
Sure.
One of the most popular shirts in Valencia and that entire East Coast region of Spain is fuck Lim, okay, in English. All right? So since 19, Valencia is either just like kind of bad or legitimately awful.
Yeah.
In the 22-23 season, they had to fight to avoid relegation, which would have been the first time since the 1980s, and they finished 16th, so they barely did.
Yeah.
And anytime they have promising talent, guess what happens? They ship those fucking kids off.
Yeah.
Okay? The fans are now organizing in-game protests.
Uh-huh.
They will blow whistles in the crowd at a particular minute of a game. They will do the TIFOs with the big banners.
Right.
Smoke bombs when they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Shit is chaos. Fans also decided, we're going to fly to Lim's home
in Singapore.
And like do hooliganism outside his house in Singapore.
Sure.
Which I don't know.
I wouldn't recommend that.
Correct.
Sure.
We'll leave it at that. I don't think you're allowed to chew gum there still. That's not an urban legend. They tried to take him to court in Spain. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. The fans did. Okay. Lim has said he's not getting rid of it. He's not getting rid of Valencia.
Yeah.
He's the majority owner.
Yeah.
And basically fuck you back.
Right.
Okay. There's one detail I've left out.
Okay.
This is the thing that sunk it in for me.
Okay.
And it was almost like I saw the tape in the ring and now I'm cursed.
Yeah.
I can't go back.
Okay.
Because this, I don't think exists anywhere else in sports.
Because I want to say.
Yeah?
So far, the world you have described to me does not fit your general profile, but go ahead.
Well, all right, let's walk it out.
The teams you care about and root for and the pain you absorb
mm-hmm.
in the process are not, by and large, management shitholes. Like, I think if you...
I have Thomas Dimitrov's cell phone. I mean, we could probably...
I understand that. But, like, I don't think... Look, the world you are describing sounds a lot more like the New Orleans Saints now. The New York Mets for like a good 20 years under previous ownership.
You're picking all my rivals here for a reason.
It sounds like a lot of stretches of the Dolphins to some extent. It sounds like the Angels. Like, it doesn't sound like the Braves, the Braves and the Falcons, who have their own set of like, I guess I always see the Braves and the Falcons.
You do know that 2007 happened, right? That our quarterback went to federal prison for dogfighting and Bobby
Petrino
walked
out? I do know that that happened, but like.
Kidnapping equals dogfighting? No, no?
Yeah, but we're not going to open that can of worms. Okay. I guess what I'm saying is that like most of the misery that I think you have dealt with as a fan of those two teams in particular has to do with times that they have failed to meet the moment in the game. Like, I can't think of that many times where, you know,
I get where you're going, but that when I stumbled into the fact that they went to
the Falcons have never hired a coach where the league laughed at them. There are other franchises where that's not true.
No. I would
Petrino?
We need to
even
call,
at the time
we need I, to call John Boyce because there's okay. There are moments within history.
Yeah.
June Jones was not particularly well thought of. That's the first one that comes to mind.
Sure.
And Bobby Petrino is maybe one of the worst hires in NFL history just because of how it goes down. And, like, ask Mike Zimmer about it. I would push back.
Okay.
And at the zenith, this one little aberration now, history says it. I mean, they were good historically.
Yeah.
And then they were underneath the bigger
Yeah.
I keep saying programs. I'm never going to not do that. They went to the Champions League final in 2000 and 2001 and lost. Mm-hmm. And that's when it snapped in my head because it felt like the 90s
okay.
World Series.
Okay, but this right. is, I haven't let you make your final. This is okay. This is the thing.
This is more of my affinity for like, oh my God, like this is, they literally also have a haunted amusement park.
Okay, good. Go
this
ahead.
Is the one where like, this has less to do with me and more like, I can't wait to tell Ryan about this.
Okay, good.
Okay. I want to go all the way back to the beginning. Remember, do you recall off the top of your head the first story that I found when I did this chronologically?
I think the first thing you said was about the new stadium.
Yes, sir.
And the funds they had raised for it.
$377 million US.
Okay.
By current conversion rates.
Yeah.
Cool.
And you
cool,
said
cool.
This must be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So the current stadium is called the Mestalla. Mm-hmm. So there's the new Mestalla and the Mestalla.
Yeah.
So the current Mestalla is considered like a soccer landmark. It's old, but it's like old and charming.
Yeah.
It's not like old, like, you know, Three Rivers old. It's okay. Just like, you okay. know, it's old. It's old like Fenway old,
yeah,
I guess.
Right.
Or by what I'm told.
Yeah.
Okay. Has a nice vibe. It's the north side is like very steep. That's famous because it creates like good, like a wall of sound when they're good, whatever, da da da. But the Mestalla is like kind of well liked and well thought of in soccer circles
as a venue,
like as from visiting fans too, and it's like near a park and it's nice. Sure. But the one thing that soccer does have in common with the United States to a T, one to one, is that you got to make your money in the stadiums, and you need to constantly be either renovating or building a new facility, and Valencia is no stranger to that. Obviously, you say all the same stuff applies that you think of: signage, advertising, luxury suites, concessions, yada, like
other events,
bigger, more seats, more luxury, all the exact same thing that happens to us in the U.S. Okay, so charming stadium, but nah, we're gonna go downtown into the heart of Valencia and we're gonna build new Mestalla. Okay, so the new Mestalla construction is underway and Valencia is slated to move in the 27-28 season. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ryan, when do you think construction began?
You were reading a story this summer about funding getting approved?
Right.
Shortly thereafter?
2007.
Wait, what? They've spent 17 years? So to back you up.
Yeah.
One of the thing, like one of the sort of like touristy things, but a touristy thing that's absolutely worth doing in Spain is going to see Sagrada Familia.
Did it.
A cathedral that is still in they're not done, right?
Yeah. The parallel you're drawing here is beautiful. Keep going.
But part of
it's
what's
almost done.
Part of what's charming about it is if you like, I have been to Spain twice,
mm-hmm.
and I've been like the time that separated those two trips was about a decade. So you go to the same spot and you're like, oh, this is very different from what I've seen before, and you can see sort of like, but again, that's talking about one of the world's most famous like pieces of public art and architecture, not a new soccer stadium that can't get built for almost 20 years. Why is this happening?
Okay, real fast. Basilica de la Sagrada Familia is in Barcelona. Okay. It has been under construction for like hundreds of years.
I think maybe like 130, 150 or something.
Something
if I remember
like that,
correctly.
Right?
Yeah.
Antonio Gaudi is a very famous architect, artist. Like, it's incredibly distinct. I'm not even going to try and use the verbiage. One of the things I lack as a writer is the ability to describe architecture or art because I didn't study those things and it really hurts like as an adult. It's technically Gothic Revival. I'm not just reading off of this, but it's also it's a modernist movement too. There aren't a lot of straight lines. And when I
it has an organic quality.
When I looked up in La Sagrada Familia on the same trip a couple of days before I fell in love with Valencia, I got really, really, really crazy bad vertigo and had to like touch things on the way
reorient
out.
Reorient yourself.
Because there are no straight lines. Yes. And I don't know how else to describe that. I looked hundreds of feet in the air inside of this. It's not a cathedral in your brain. If you're listening to this and you don't know, like, Google it.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway.
Sorry.
You would think maybe this is like a thing in Spain. My friend, it is not.
Why has it taken so long?
Do you remember the world size event that you mentioned in my timeline?
The financial crisis?
Valencia picked a bad time
to finance a stadium?
No, just to get a little bit bad at soccer.
Oh, okay.
Because you have a sort of almost like a riptide effect.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Also, 400 million euros debted. You know, like we had a bad goofball, right? Our kidnapper, Sorlaire. Okay. He's running you into debt, but he's also sort of running you into debt by like he's being erratic and bad at his job, but he's also like spending to keep up.
Yeah.
And so it's like it's a lot of good going after bad.
Yeah.
The world economy,
the market conditions
tanks
are crashing
in 2008. Yeah. Right? The financing is going through. And then also Spain especially is one of the countries that just gets absolutely demolished. Valencia specifically is a region, it's a shipping port, like it's just bad all the way around.
Okay.
Construction began in 2007. In 2008, there was a brief stoppage because four workers were tragically killed in an accident with scaffolding.
Okay.
This is not uncommon.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be glib.
No,
this
yes.
Is not,
right.
This is not why it's
that
still.
Doesn't, yes. That doesn't explain.
Construction shuts down in 2009 when, oops, no money, which was a thing that happened a lot across the world during the financial crisis.
Sure.
If you're young enough, I have a hard time describing it without breaking into sort of a Michael Lewisian labyrinth of explanation. But Ryan, it's sort of built.
Like, but it's not done.
But it's not done?
Yeah.
It sits empty.
This feels very floored.
This is why I knew you'd like this. In the heat of Valencia.
Uh-huh.
It sits maybe, let's say, 65% done. So,
yeah. So you can see it.
Oh, right.
It's very clear what it is. I thought it was
their stadium as I'm zipping by in like a taxi and...
But it's more of a shell.
And again, they're talking. Remember, we're talking broken English to the big dumb American, and he goes, "Yeah, like, oh, yeah, football stadium." And I was like, "Oh, that's okay. That's a new Mestalla."
Part of I'm going to speculate here. Part of also what makes the challenge of a 17-year delay, 18-year delay, so absurd is that what you want your stadium to be state of the art, right? But that changes drastically over that time.
It
like
also,
we are talking about, you know, you're mentioning like NFL stadiums that were quote unquote new in 2007 are now outdated and need to be replaced.
Yes. So in the course of that 16 years, exactly to your point, not only is it, hey, are we going to resume this? It's also going to be like, well, we had this amenity. We had one of the big features was we were going to have an underground parking garage, which was a massive construction project.
Yeah.
That gets scrapped.
We were going to give everyone a free Zune.
Yeah, probably. God knows that Zune probably would have been a title sponsor of this fucking soccer team. They go over debates on how to finish it, how many seats should be in it, how much money can we even find to finish it.
Yeah.
And if anyone is listening who's ever been involved in like a home renovation project or anything small to scale, Imagine trying, instead of being like, oh, we wanted to finish our kitchen.
And that turned into gutting a bathroom.
But like, which the project needs 20 grand more, but like, I've got a contractor and he can get it all done for $5,000.
Yeah.
Imagine a fucking stadium that you're trying to do that to.
And it's not. And to your point, if this happens in your house and you're really stuck, you're like, well, we can sell the house. You can't sell the stadium to somebody. Nobody else wants it.
So for 16 years, it sits in the heart of Valencia, downtown, 65% done.
As a useless eyesore.
For 16 years. Meanwhile, yeah. People are like, you know, games of Mestalla aren't bad.
Listen, man, RFK still standing. Well, was at least for a long time.
After these 16 years, multiple fights going from the city all the way to the federal level. There's fights with the redesign, the cost savings. They do scrap all of the crazy in 2006 brain amenities that would have been cutting edge. And now they're just like, let's just get it fucking
done. Let's just.
Yeah. By the way, I've seen conflicting reports on the total attendance size when they're done. It won't be that much different from the Mestalla. The amenities ostensibly would be better, but I also, in your mind's eye, this is the last thing, I want you to think about like an NFL stadium or a college stadium, whatever, that got built 2006.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Have you been to like Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta or the Viking Stadium, US Bank? Like, if you walk into a brand new stadium now in America in any sport, and then you walk into a stadium that was built in 2006, there are a lot of things automatically that you're like, that doesn't really cut it anymore.
Yes.
So they're not really moving into a new stadium.
Right. Right.
But they have to.
Right.
And Lim isn't going to do anything different about it. In fact, they've got to finance just to get this old thing done. By the way, this Saturday they kick off at 2:30 Central against Real Sociedad. And I'll be watching. That's it.
Like,
I'm a Valencia fan. That's the story.
All right.
And I'm in.
I'm gonna go back to your question, though, because we haven't answered that part.
Okay.
You asked, do you have to experience success? Because I don't want to bait and switch. I don't want to pull a Valencia.
I'm signing up for all this.
All right. So here's
because I bought a fridge magnet after too much wine.
So here's the answer I'm going to give you on whether or not you need success to have an enjoyable fan experience is an impossible question to answer because it's different for every person. Let's put that out to the side. But here is what I'm thinking of, and is maybe a useful comp for Valencia. And now you can decide if that's a good thing or bad. Who was unexpectedly one of the most talked about teams last year in college football, 2024 season, even though they didn't actually put together like a season that notable?
A talked about team who didn't
super
have a notable
talked,
team.
Super talked about team.
So we're not a talking about Indiana.
A team that hosted game day and I don't think finished above 500.
Are you talking about Florida State?
I'm talking about Cal.
Oh, okay.
Cal fans just decided last year, like, we're going to have a lot of fun with this. Cal has facilities issues, debt issues. Their structure, their place in like the world of college football is super in flux. They're in the fucking ACC, which I don't think anybody is like thinks makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Similarly, if we really like the time period you're talking about, like Cal was pretty good in that like early 2000s stretch. Certainly was like in the conversation for one of the better teams in the Pac-10, things like that, and is now sort of like kind of a weird mess. But you know who that doesn't who has decided that won't impact them? Cal fans. Cal fans, I think, are a weird testament to like you can be mad about these things. I'm not saying Cal fans aren't aware or don't care about like structural issues within like the sport and their team. But you don't have to let them define you. Like you can say like, fuck it. I'm here because this is fun for me and I'm going to like lean into that as hard as I possibly can. I don't know how you feel about me saying signed up for the Cal football experience in Spanish soccer form, especially because the one thing Cal fans have going for them in the United States is
Ron Rivera.
Well, they can find other Cal fans to do this with. There's a Valencia FC bar, I'll tell you what.
I said FC this entire time, don't worry.
I'll tell you what. If there is one, I'm sure it's in a part of Nashville you don't want to be.
Okay. I have an answer on the bat. It was I saw the logo.
It does look cool.
It does look cool. Yeah. It's local to the region, and also when they were like way back in the day settling, which is a, you know, specific range of time.
Yeah.
It was thought that one of the reasons Valencia was settled was because the proliferation of bats kept the mosquitoes at bay from spreading diseases.
Okay.
But the other, the consensus story is that when King James was leading the Christians against the Moors in the Crusades, a bat landed on his battle flag, and he took that as a warning, and then they had changed a battle tactic or something, and they ended up winning the battle.
Okay.
So a bat became good luck. King James of Aragon was reconquering the city from the Moors, and the bat landed on the top of his flag. He interpreted it as a good sign.
Man, that's Auburn as hell.
Why you gotta be that mean?
Phantom Island is presented by Homefield. Our producer is Michael Serber, and our music is from the song and album titled, well, weirdly enough, Phantom Island by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.